I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's a decent beef, eh? Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name is Marcus, and it's lovely to have you here. I have three lovely chaps with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Rizzle kicks.
And Luke.
All right.
How are you doing, boys? Now, according to a friend of Wayne Rooney's, the Manchester United star would like to become a stand-up comedian one day. Who from the footballing world do you think would make a good stand-up comic? Jimbo.
Not Wayne Rooney.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a scouser. They're all great at it.
Yeah, that's true.
Who would I choose? I would go with David Silver, right? Because he already has very good timing.
Oh, that's good.
Delivery is exquisite.
Yeah,
very good at misdirection.
And also, I
can even imagine a kind of opening joke for David Silver, something like, "I know what you're thinking. The bastard child of Peter Crouch and some sort of Spanish rodent has let himself go." Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, it works already.
Works. Yeah,
David, get on that.
His nickname's El Magio, which I think is the magician, isn't it?
Could bring some of that into it.
Yeah, like a bit of a Jerry Sadler style.
He could do cabaret nights as well.
Yeah.
Get a bit of extra cash.
Yeah. I don't think he's short of cash, but if he ever is, after some very questionable business decisions, he might want to go into it.
Yeah. Good start.
Well, I mean, he's considering this, he will have made those questionable decisions.
Yeah, that's true.
Excellent. Pete?
I'm going to go for Charlie Nicholas, because his Sky Sports Jeff Stelling banter is just dynamite.
it was lovely.
If you haven't seen that, do YouTube it.
Just YouTube it.
Maybe we're on RambleTube, we'll have it.
I think it's Charlie Nicholas, terrible banter, or worst banter in the world or something.
I think the YouTube title is officially the worst banter of all time.
Where he's trying to tell a story about Jeff Stelling not wanting to wear his spectacles on telly.
Because he says that he's watching in a game and he says that it was never offside when it was given offside. And Jeff Stelling says, "Are you sure you need to go to Specsavers?" Because it was
well, maybe it's you who needs to go to Specsavers, Jeff, because
he's from Cornwall now.
Because you don't even want to you couldn't drive home last night without your spectacles, and you don't want to wear them on here because you get slagged off.
it's amazing. That's pretty much word for word what Nicholas says. Yeah.
Initial thoughts to that comeback goes on way too long. Way too long.
A simple F off is fine.
Bail yourself out with that.
Imagine if someone did that on Soccer Saturday. Oh, fuck off, Jeff.
Rodney Marsh would have done it. Remember, back in the day?
Go on, man.
The days of Rodney Marsh.
Rodney Marsh. Okay, so you're going Charlie Nicholas. Luke, who have you got?
Well, I read that back in 2010, well, I think it was about 2010, I remember reading it at the time, that Peter Crouch was named like Britain's funniest sportsman or something, wasn't he?
Because of one line, pretty much.
I think because of his robot as well. But I'm not going to go for him. I'm not going for Roy Keane either. And whilst I think, whilst I think Jim White would fancy himself,
that'd be worth it. I think
I've settled on the inevitable Sir Dave Richards,
like a character expert.
Like a Jim Davison.
You think he was a character actor?
Like a Jim Davison style,
definitely.
Yeah. But more slapstick. Accidentally.
Jim Davison. So a couple of sort of racial gags. Which would be unacceptable even on like...
He'd work the expat community.
And then put his foot in a bucket.
He'd work the expat community.
He would.
I've just got Sam Allardyce mother-in-law jokes.
That would work, wouldn't it?
Full of gravy.
He's like a Les Dawson style character.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. One of those old-fashioned...
But in fairness to Big Sam, he seems very old-fashioned and he to some extent looks very old-fashioned, but in his footballing...
No, he isn't.
He's very forward-thinking.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the comedy.
Yeah, fair enough.
So he'd be kind of like doing studies on it and stuff. What's funny, what works, what doesn't. Be infographics involved.
What's that?
He'd have the end of the Piers rocking.
Yeah,
he'd definitely be that sort of comic.
How many
bow tie?
How many laughs per minute?
Yeah. Very good. Jimbo's definitely got the points.
Oh, thank
you. Without 16 in a row.
Did you hear his answer?
Yeah, it's good.
There you go. Right, there we go. Now, we've got to start with the FA Cup and Spurs versus Bolton. Terrible scenes at White Hart Lane, abandoned after 41 minutes. Of course, Fabrice Muamba collapsed. And at the time of recording, he's still in critical condition, or he's shown signs of improvement. But absolutely horrific scenes at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, it was very. I watched the game live on television, and yeah, it was clear pretty early on that something was horrendously wrong.
Yeah.
But in a way, you know, it's good that it happened where it happened, because you get the best medical attention straight away.
That's right.
Yeah. And it looks like he, fingers crossed, they're going to make a full recovery. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the time of recording, it had been reported that he'd been sort of talking to his family from his bed and stuff like that. He recognised everyone, so you know, hopefully he will make a full recovery. And of course, we wish him well.
Mm. I mean, a friend of mine was at the game, and he just said it was just morbid, you know, the atmosphere and all. But
it was very respectful, though.
It was very respectful. Yeah. Both fans chanted his name, which was quite nice to see. And it has united the footballing world quite spectacularly, in some senses, with the Real Madrid players.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the team. That's a really nice gesture.
And Pirlo as well.
Well, Andrea Pirlo dedicated Juventus' 5-0 win against Fiorentina to Muamba, and Tim Cahill with his Pray for Muamba shirt. And
Gary Cahill, you mean?
Of course, Gary Cahill, forgive me. So, I mean, there's not much else at the moment we can really say on it. But
well, hopefully lessons can be learned. I mean, because from what I remember, I talked briefly about it on Five Live on Saturday night, and they were saying on there that academy graduates are given heart tests and that sort of thing. But as far as I know, it's not universally in the Premier League.
No, it's the echo testing, isn't it? It's
like
And people, certainly players that don't come from England, certainly they don't get it. If you come from like non-league, you don't get it. If you're over a certain age and stuff, you get quite good resources when you're at sort of youth team level. But if you don't go through a youth team that has it, you know. Apparently the test only cost £30. Yeah. And you know, there's stuff like the resting heart rate and the stress heart rate monitors
difficult.
And stuff that they all wear. That's just, you know, that's just peak and an average heart. It doesn't test arrhythmic.
Well, exactly. These little intricacies are very difficult to pick up on.
Yeah.
But I mean, we saw what happened with the Peter Cech injury, where because Mourinho went absolutely postal about it. I think Cech had to wait 30 minutes before he got in an ambulance and went to hospital.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Hopefully, and lessons were learnt from that, and because of that lesson that was learnt, Muamba subsequently got the best possible care. So hopefully, if they can bring in these sort of annual checks for players, and that may be a lesson to be learned, because we've seen it happen before, both here and overseas, and players have survived, but unfortunately they've died as well. Mm. And you know,
we're sort of at the age where the main one was probably Mark Vivian Foy. It was like the sort of big one, sort of our sort of generation. And I think, to be honest, when I saw that happen, I thought, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was. I remember seeing that live, and it was just awful.
Do you know what I was terrified about at the time? Weird, in a weird way, and it was clearly evident very early on that something serious had happened, but I was worried that, and certain players who I won't name, who fake injury and pretend they're not injured, I was just praying it wouldn't undermine the fact that he was seriously injured and the referee wasn't at all cynical about it, because every second counts. And hopefully those players who do fake injury can actually have a look at themselves, because every second counts. You need to get to the players as quickly as possible.
That's right.
And you've got these players who roll around and pretend to be injured when they're not, and that really can undermine it. But after I think Howard Webb was superb.
Yeah, brilliant. And to be honest, his background is, you know, ideal for that.
That's
sort
right,
of situation.
Yeah.
He's a policeman, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think he still is a policeman, isn't he, on a sabbatical for 5 years?
Quite.
I think he's going to be a policeman again when he goes back.
Possibly. Imagine that.
He's got a lot of authority, Howard Webb. He dealt with it absolutely superbly well, I thought.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you know, our thoughts and wishes and prayers go out to, you know, Muamba and all concerned. But,
absolutely.
Yeah. Elsewhere in the FA Cup, Everton drew 1-1 at home to Sunderland.
Great game.
It was a good game. Barnsley with a great goal for Sunderland.
It was sniper-esque.
It was brilliant. Wasn't it? I thought Drenthe should have had a penalty, or Everton should have had a penalty.
Drenthe was excellent.
Drenthe went down.
I always think Drenthe should have a penalty.
Is that right?
I love him, he's brilliant.
Do you know something?
He's not been crazy enough, though.
Quarter final of the FA Cup at Goodison Park.
Yeah.
Proper old fashioned stuff.
That's right.
That's a great venue for a cup tie, that.
It is. Absolutely. I love Goodison Park.
We don't have those semi finals in those grounds.
Villa Park as well. Villa Park is such a huge part of the FA Cup, and that's as much as why I hate it being at Wembley as anything else. The fact that you don't get those actual club grounds used as neutral grounds.
Well,
it's nice. It's a real sort of
Villa Park and Old Trafford, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Highbury once. Chelsea versus Wimbledon.
Well, I think it depends who gets through to the semi.
Yeah, of course, because Chelsea v Wimbledon, there's no point in. You know.
Let's do it with Villa. Yeah.
Well, they did that once, didn't they? I can't remember who it was. The Spurs are.
Well, it's happened when you've got because there's Wembley for the semis now. So Neumann commentators go, oh, and the quarterfinals about to kick off. One game from Wembley, it just seems wrong.
It just undermines the final.
And then when you've got United and City in the cup final like last season, where they have to come all the way down to London.
Well, if you've got like a Liverpool Newcastle final, just have it Old Trafford.
Is there not enough events that they could just slide in instead of the semis? It's just just stick a mort across match.
It'll be the FA Cup. Cup semi-final between say Liverpool and Newcastle and Monster Trucks. They'll just have to play around them
at half time
because they've got to claw that money back somehow, haven't they?
How long till it's the quarterfinals at Wembley? How long till every game is at Wembley?
England Euro 96 brings to mind. One all there. I thought it was a good header from Tim Cahill, actually. Did well to react. He was kind of in the air, and then
he's not been amongst the goals as much as he
hasn't. No, but Everton will be disappointed they didn't win that one.
Tim Cahill has been sort of just working his balls off for about 8 years now, though. You know, he must be knackered.
Do you still dislike him, Pete?
Not as much as I did.
Because he doesn't score, so he doesn't do that celebration.
He doesn't do that. He doesn't do the celebration. He hasn't scored against Newcastle for a little while, and he's been quite so vocal or obnoxious, really.
Yeah. Liverpool beat Stoke City 2-1. Luke and I have got them down to win the competition.
Yeah.
Downing and Crouch on the score sheet, eh? Should both players be in line for the Euros?
Sorry, Jim. Do you want to?
Yeah, I would say on Peter Crouch, I wouldn't take him. I think it's time to. I think he's had his time. I think it's time to look at something different and move on from that sort of selection. Personally,
okay.
And he also scores
with Dan. He's
got a very, very good England record.
He has, but they tend to be against sort of. His stats flatter to deceive a bit, he got like a hat trick against Trinidad and Tobago, and he's got some
Jamaica.
I can only score who I've got in front of me.
Well, he scored against Trinidad.
So he pulled the guy's dreadlocks for.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's.
Any question that's asked about this? Can I just stress this again?
Please do.
Even if we get through the group, we're going out. Italy or Spain.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter.
Whoever's leading
the
line, it doesn't matter.
Take the four of us. Take the four of us and Grant Holt. But one thing that's worth mentioning as well with Downing, though, is that we've got quite an abundance of players in those positions.
Yeah.
It's a very competitive area of the pitch, possibly the most competitive area we've got.
I'd say so.
So you could justify not taking Downing because he's not performed in terms of goals and assists this season.
No, he really, really hasn't.
He's been terrible.
There are players who deserve to go in those positions. There are so many players over him. Even Scott Sinclair, you might argue, he's got a better shout.
Scott Sinclair. Well, we'll talk about Swansea in a moment. But it was a good win for Liverpool. Kind of reasonably routine, I'd say.
They seem a good cup team this season.
Yeah,
they're so tough to beat at home, and that goes a long way when you're in a cup competition and you get those home draws. So
they're not at home for the next round, are they?
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't be anyway. They'd be
I've got a theory on this. That part of the reason they're so tough to beat at home is because in secret, what Kenny Dalglish has done is he's used Andy Carroll as a centre-back, but up front.
This is a silly theory.
It's like it gives you that extra sort of kind
protection.
Of strength. Yeah, it gives you that extra shield.
Yeah.
He's like the big Welshman, John Charles.
So,
Was he
at the back and up front.
But can I just stress, nowhere near as good.
Yeah, sorry, John.
400 times more expensive.
Right, Chelsea 5, Leicester City 2.
Yeah.
Fernando Torres with a brace, Pete.
Oh, sad Nando.
Leicester.
Yeah. You wait five months for a goal, or whatever it was. 5 months or something, wasn't it? Two come along.
Against Leicester.
He did play very, very well, very nearly scuffed his shot wide for the first goal.
He was involved
in everything.
It was quite tricky to get out of his feet.
He didn't mean it.
No, he didn't.
Do you not?
No, I don't think he did
at
all.
Give him something.
He's been playing well for a little while, but, he's just not had that sort of...
That was exactly what he needed.
Well, he's found his level.
Take nothing away from Leicester, though. They were very good. Well.
They played well for a team that conceded 5 goals. Yeah. I do know how it happened because Chelsea are very good compared to someone like Leicester City. But Leicester City played well.
Ben Marshall's goal.
No,
absolute,
what a beauty.
Yeah.
Beauty.
Yeah.
Absolute hit.
But there was a moment, goal. Wasn't there, where they could have made it 4-3.
Yeah.
And you just, ooh, but then Morello scored.
What did Dan Hansen say about Marshall's goal?
It was a decent hit. Anyway, I did find this quite funny. When Di Matteo was in the press conference after the game, there was a question from the press, somebody, I'm not too sure who it was, about Torres, and he asked Di Matteo about Torres. He's a striker and they live by scoring goals. Is that just what he needed?
What a waste
of a question.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is your moment, mate. Right? You've got a chance here.
Yeah.
Don't get many questions. Make it a good one.
But there's no excuse for that, is there? Because if he's quite new to the whole thing, he's that was his big moment.
Yeah.
And if he isn't new, then he should be... better questions than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would just went Torres, Mores, Flores. It's really confusing.
Yeah, yeah, what was that last bit again? Write it down.
There's not enough of that in press conferences. No one actively takes a piss in press conferences. Yeah.
And I heard someone's phone go off again and I was going, De Roy Keane, yeah, Mateo. Yeah.
You can answer that.
Yeah. Oh dear. Now let's go to the Premier League, where Swansea were at it again, passing the opposition to death. It was Fulham this time at Cottage. And they're just brilliant.
They are.
Aren't they? I mean, there's no...
You were at the game, were you?
I wasn't at the game, no. Okay. There was one moment where they kept the ball for, I think Match of the Day showed it, for a minute and 38 seconds.
Was that when they scored the second goal?
It's just before that, I think.
Yeah, it was just before that. There was when they scored the second goal, they got possession from, I think, the keeper, or certainly one of the defenders, passed it all the way up the pitch. Cross went in and it was overhit, but I think it was Danny Graham who retrieved it, and they just went all the way back to the keeper and started again and scored. It was just like, okay, well.
I mean, everyone's sort of talking about Swansea being the blueprint for a Premier League team, certainly coming up from playing attractive football and playing the football in the right way and stuff. I'm thinking, they're a blueprint for England, I think.
Right. But a lot of those players are English in that lineup.
And Welsh,
there's a number of Englishmen as well.
I think that Michael Cox made a good point about how the best way to sort of beat them is to press them really hard and make them keep a kick it long.
Yeah.
But the most surprising, and obviously Fulham didn't do that. Fulham did make them look quite good.
Well, Swansea did it themselves. I mean, there's a great example with Danny Graham in the first half when he closed down Mark Schwarzer. They didn't score from it, I don't believe, but it very nearly led to a goal. And they just kept that sort of pressure up.
But to be fair, Fulham was slightly unlucky. It could have gone either way.
It was all the more impressive. Well, I don't agree with that.
No, I don't.
I thought Fulham, at times, Fulham had a couple of chances. I don't think 3-0 was the fair scoreline. I think Swansea were good value for the win, but not by three goals.
Well, Schwarzer made a bit of an error for the third, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple of cock-ups as well
But the thing about Swansea,
Senderos, wasn't it, fell over.
It was good because Fulham are well-known. We've been there before. We've been there this season. We've seen them play at home, and we saw them pull Newcastle apart. And they play it well, nicely, and they keep it on the floor and all those other cliches. But Swansea didn't let them do that, and that's why it's so impressive. Now Swansea, you could say it reminds me a little bit of Ipswich when they got promoted a number of years ago. Sixth or seventh,
they did,
and they really struggled the next season because people found them out. I don't know if it's going to happen this season.
I think it's different because Ipswich relied a bit on Marcus Stewart's goals.
Yeah, it did.
Swansea have got goals
all over the team. Mm.
Sigurdsson's made a real difference. Hopefully, they'll be able to afford to actually sign him from Hoffenheim.
They've got to keep him. He's a great player. What I wanted to say is that if they had found their feet away from home earlier in the season, they'd be doing even better.
Yeah.
They'd be even higher, because at home they've been brilliant. Away they've started to find their form, but earlier in the season they struggled at home.
Yeah, and that's easy to say, though, mate, isn't it? You've got to remember they are coming up from the Championship. It's going to take them a while to find their feet.
Yeah, but Pete, you touched on it just then. Swansea, they were clapped off again by the opposition fans, the home fans.
Well, it's just so entertaining.
But people see the value, the entertainment, the quality, and the style of play. Why don't more managers sort of think, well, hang on a minute here, they've not got the riches of other clubs, they've not got the big names, this can be achieved, this can be done.
But I don't know if is it as simple as just saying, all right, passing triangles quickly and just give each other options. I mean, saying that and implementing that are not the same, are they? You've got to get the whole team working to that rhythm.
It's all about what players do off the ball. For me, just making sure that you're an open man. There's so many times where you just sort of, right, I'm a winger, I'm going to stay here on the wing, I am in midfield, so I'm going to stay in midfield. Support your man, and then he's got an option, and then if somebody's got your back, it's
a combination of things, which is that you've got those two players in front of the back four, Britton and Allen. And Brendan Rodgers has obviously signed players and trained players with this style in mind, but what they do, which I like, which you could see, I'd like to see an awful lot more in England teams, especially as Pete's mentioned, is that sometimes when you've got the ball, it's okay to give it square and get it back again. There's nothing on, and there's no problem with doing that for a minute and a half, 2 minutes. The problem you have in this country is you've got players, one, that don't really like doing that. You've got players who like doing sort of blood and thunder, siege tower strikers and 60-yard passes.
And an impatient crowd.
And you've also got crowds that get on your back.
Yeah.
And I've been at, I use Fratton Park as an example because it's the stadium I've been to the most. If you start knocking it, even if you're 2-0 up and you start knocking it around the back four, the crowd get on their back. They don't like it. They start booing. They get antsy about it. And credit to Swansea fans. They obviously don't do that. And Swansea are benefiting from it.
They're too busy going all there, I imagine.
Yeah.
Other fun can be had while it's going on.
You mentioned Sinclair earlier. Yeah. I mean, he scored 7 this season, I think. He got a hatful last season from a sort of a wide forward position. He's having a great time of it.
Yeah, he is.
I wouldn't be averse to him being in the England team.
England do have a lot of wingers at the minute, don't they?
Yeah, they do. It's strange. I mean, do you remember there was a time we just didn't have anyone to play on the left, so Paul Scholes played on the left.
Yeah, for ages. He's an
embarrassment of riches.
Well, he could be back in the middle though come the summer.
Yeah, indeed.
Who knows?
Can I just say he wasn't the worst left midfield player we had in the squad at the time.
Enter Steve Guppy. Now, Guppy wasn't a bad
Frogger,
but yeah, he wasn't international class. Wigan 1, West Brom 1. Wigan dominated, but they just couldn't get would have been a priceless win.
On this game, I do just want to congratulate Sian Massey on getting that offside decision right. I mean, there's so much to know, isn't there, with an offside decision.
The
offside
princess.
If you are listening there, love, well done. You've earned your vote.
Yeah, we're delighted for you, the same way we were a year ago.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Keep it up.
Yeah, well done, you.
For idiots. Because we will get emails and tweets, etc. Yeah. Just click that unfollow button.
Yeah.
That's right.
Did you hear what Paul Sharman said about Wigan?
Yeah.
He used to play for them, and he said, well, it's no surprise they're down there. They can't score goals and they concede too many. Cheers. That was the extent of his post-match. Yeah.
Thank you.
I like it.
That Wigan casino's rubbish. Yeah. It's peaked a long time ago.
We had the old cliche as well on Match of the Day when Malumbu was booked for West Brom when he kind of pushed, was it Fletcher, for Wigan? And it was, he's raised his hands. The letter of the law says if you've raised your hands, you've got to be sent off. Are we the only ones?
Yeah, Jonathan Pearce went further than that and said, if he raises his hands above chest height, the rules state he has to go.
Yeah,
what? That's
literally nothing in the rules. Yeah.
Malumbu's an absolute unit. Yeah. He's a really, really good player.
I think it's in the rules if Malumbu raises his hands. Yeah. Yeah. Run.
It's not an aggressive act, it's an act of war.
He can punch a tree down.
It's become a lawless pitch.
Absolutely.
He does, you know that bonus level in Street Fighter where they kick the car in?
Yeah.
Malumbu does that, like, for training.
That's right.
For breakfast.
Yeah.
I don't know what I mean by
That's what Bentner does in Newcastle City. Yeah.
He got let off, didn't he? Apparently it was just Lee Clattermore did that.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay.
Very good, Jim. Very good. The 2 points really dropped for Wigan there when they really should have won.
It's a funny one with Wigan because they are actually playing really well, like really, really well. And then they get to sort of the point where they're meant to finish and it's just utterly brainless, like clown-like. There was some really hilarious misses going on. I do just wonder if they can keep up this sort of level of performance when it really, really comes to the crunch. I think they might win a couple of games just from, you have to be a bit more ruthless. You see teams do it when it gets towards the end of the season, they're just more ruthless because they absolutely have to be.
Yeah.
And I think Wigan have got all the tools in place to allow them to do that.
Yeah.
It's three from that bottom five. For me, I think Wolves are absolutely struggling.
Bottom three are all on the same points.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, of course, Wolves got hammered by Manchester United 5-0. Mm-hmm.
I hate it when teams just go, it's Man U. It doesn't matter if we lose 5-0. It does matter. It matters when
you lose 5-0. For confidence.
Well, they were a man down as well.
They were a man down.
I know.
But it was the manager. I know what you're saying. It's no shame to lose 5-0.
It is.
Yeah. And also,
it's just proper belly tickling that was for me. I don't care if it was 10 men.
Zubar made an outrageous decision there. Or an outrageous couple of decisions. And it's been a season for that. I mean, we mentioned Nolan. It's happened once or twice around sort of other players.
Rooney.
As well. If you're one of Zubar's teammates and you're at home to United, you're fighting for your life, you're a goal down, but you're not playing bad, you've had a few chances, and he goes and does that.
Thanks, mate.
I'd fine him as much as I could. I would, because you cannot do that.
You're round.
Perhaps the difference between us and professional football is when we played in that tournament, which we won, you got sent to Simbin in the final when the lad went through a goal. And as you walked up, I went, well, mate, you have to do that.
No. Luke's actual words was, he's just so quick for me.
Even though it's my way of explanation.
You can relate that to any player.
Yeah, even though it was like defending the Alamo for the last few minutes, you know. Yeah.
They do play at very different levels, though, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah
I'm just trying to inject a bit of rambleness into...
I think the Wolves owners have got to be kicking themselves. I don't want to get on Terry Connor's back because he's doing his best job he can. He's also an ex Pompey striker as well, so I'll give him a bit of leeway. But who's the best man to get him out of that position right now?
Mourinho.
Mick McCarthy's done it already.
Oh, okay, right.
You could do it now.
Chicharito's his first goal was. He scored it like almost like Michael Jackson. He did this sort of little twist as he scored it.
Yeah. He loves scoring goals.
Yeah.
He can't get the style of Michael Jackson.
Yeah, he does love it. It's great. Yeah.
I read something interesting around on the match report of this game. I forget who wrote it now. But Paul Scholes has never received a single Ballon d'Or vote.
Wow. Is that right?
He's never got a single vote.
That's obscene.
And the list of players who have got more votes than him is quite funny. It's like this Canute's got a few and all sort of stuff.
It's an anti-ginger conspiracy.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
My goodness. Well, same with Manchester United, just briefly. They're out of the Europa League. I have to mention that they lost 2-1 to Bilbao in Bilbao. 5-3 on aggregate. Bilbao looking very good. Also, though, Manchester City went out of the Europa League on away goals. They beat Sporting 3-2 in Manchester, but obviously lost 1-0 away. But Joe Hart nearly won the tie right at the end with a header.
I didn't see that.
Did you not? For some reason, in my mind, thinking about me watching that match, I assume you guys were with me, because when Joe Hart nearly headed, it was such a it was a decent header.
Because Lisbon were 2-0 up as well, and so City came back.
So if he'd scored, they would have gone through.
It would have been incredible.
And it was just a nice little header, cushioned header to the back post. Keeper managed to just claw it away on fingertips. And I remember sort of thinking, like, for some reason feeling like you guys were near me somehow, because I thought they're going to be so excited about they see this, because I certainly am.
I haven't seen
it. Goalkeepers, headers,
but Bilbao have got Schalke the next round, haven't they?
Yeah, that is
such a tie.
That is going to be a great tie.
Yeah.
Well, there's a few Spanish teams left in the Europa League, isn't there? There's Valencia and Atletico Madrid, so you fancy one of them perhaps to take.
Why does Schalke though?
Yeah, they've got some firepower on that team, Schalke. I love Schalke. It looks good strike.
Exciting.
Perhaps the most interesting one left are Metalist Kharkov from the Ukraine. They play at Metalist Stadium.
I don't know much about them, but they sound great.
Yeah.
Is it Yaya, that Brazilian fella who used to play for them? Is he still playing for them?
Not sure. I don't know anything
about Metalist, but it just sounds like...
I'd like to
Metallica should play there or something.
I might make them my Ukrainian team.
Yeah, good. on the name alone. Anyway, back to the UK. We're going to the Championships, where Leeds drew 1-1 with West Ham. It ended up being a good point for West Ham, probably, because it was an injury time winner. But
they have dropped off the pace, though.
The Irons are down to third.
They're having a slump.
Because Reading have moved in.
Well, let's get it into perspective. West Ham have spent a lot of money. I mean, remember they signed Nolan on a load of cash.
Yeah, on Premier League wages, basically.
Yeah, and they've got a really tough running as well. I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped out of that top
Their
two.
Goal difference isn't great as
permanently.
Well.
Permanently.
Well, three points below Reading with a game in hand. But, you know, Reading...
They're just surging, aren't we?
Yeah. But Reading, they're only 2 points off the top. I mean, and only just as well. They could have been top, because Millwall nearly beat Southampton. Ricky Lambert with a hat-trick. He was celebrating again.
He would celebrate.
Yeah, he's second and third in the 84th and 87th minute, both pens.
Lambert's first penalty was just...
Yeah, top corner.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Rocket.
See, would it be fair to say that in January, Wigan should have taken a gamble to someone like Lambert?
I think, again, I think we've said it a few times. Well, he deserves a bit of an opportunity.
They did that with Victor Moses to an extent, didn't they? And he's just not brought the goals they would hope. I mean, his overall play has contributed a lot to Wigan.
But Moses has never been he's still very young, but he's never been a real 25 goals a season, man.
No, but you got the impression they wanted that from him. I think there was a kind of assumption
he's not
would
an
go
out
into
out
that.
Forward, though.
No, but...
Well, he's just not a striker. He's a forward, but he's not a striker, is he? And Lambert, maybe he's there. What you were mentioning earlier, Jim, what I was referencing was maybe if someone like Lambert was there to finish off moves. Yeah. Because I know sometimes when players get promoted to the Premier League, they don't always pull it off. But I mean, Holt's done it this season. Graham's done it.
Yeah. In fact, Norwich have a lot of players that have, you know, it's easy to forget. Actually, Paul Lambert deserves credit. He signed a hell of a lot of players for Norwich in pre-season. I think they were probably the busiest club in pre-season. And I'm not sure any of them were from the Premier League.
No,
his scouting was just superb.
I think that's it, isn't it? You've hit the nail on the head there, that some strikers come up and people think, well, they can't do it, but it's the whole team can't do it. They don't get the service, they don't get the chances. And
we're going to blunt, aren't they? They're missing in that key area.
Exactly, yeah. If you get one chance every two games, and it puts a whole lot of pressure on you and whatnot, it's very difficult.
But we're going to make it all sorts of
Well, this is what we're saying. Yeah. We're going to get in the chances, so you'd imagine if Lambert's on the end of them instead of perhaps Boyce.
Well, if you look at something like another striker came from the Championship, something like Andy Carroll, look at this service he's not getting at Liverpool with Downing misfiring. Like, you wouldn't believe it's just one of those things.
Again, back at Wigan, I think they would have expected more from Franco Di Santo.
Yeah. And they had Barini as well, didn't they? On loan from Chelsea, who went to Italy, is doing really well there now. Reading are a funny old team, because they, as we mentioned last week, a huge run, and in that run was a 1-0 win at home against Portsmouth, who are probably the worst team in the division.
Well, they're bottom,
points deduction, but I mean, now they're probably probably the worst team, because they lost to their players. But Reading were really poor. It was one of the most average sort of performances for a team in that level of the league that I've seen. But they still ground out a win. And well, they go away to Barnsley with 4-0 away.
You know, it's a cliche in the Premier League, and it's a truth in the Championship, isn't it? You still got to be able to win when you're not playing well. And they're doing that. That's what's keeping the run going.
Mm. Yeah. Right, let's go to Scotland, where the Scottish League Cup final was played. And Kilmarnock sensationally beat Celtic 1-0 with an 84th minute winner. It's the first time Kilmarnock have won that particular trophy. Dieter van Tornout on
it's
his
a great name.
Yeah, yeah, the Belgian, on his 27th birthday, coming on and heading in the only goal. Kilmarnock didn't concede a goal through the whole tournament.
Get on that.
Which is remarkable. And so sadly, though, after the final whistle, Liam Kelly, the Kilmarnock midfielder, his father, Jack Kelly, suffered a fatal heart attack. Ooh. And it was just terrible. You know,
him running down the tunnel.
Next to the bench, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It apparently happened like, you know, 5 minutes from the end of the match or something.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, so it was, you know.
I thought it was after.
A lot of tragedy this season, haven't we?
Yeah, it's terrible. But yeah, right at the end. Mm. And of course, they're celebrating, and then suddenly the lads told that, and oh dear. Mm. So great for Kilmarnock, but incredibly sad for Liam Kelly.
The Kelly family, yes. Yeah. His thoughts with them.
Yeah. Very much so. On to the SPL. Dundee United beat Rangers 2-1. Rangers are just. It's just awful for them at the minute, isn't it? They only had 5 subs on the bench instead of the allotted 7. And Ali McCoy said they could have had 7, but because of injuries and youth team players not deserving a call-up, they just went for 5.
Yeah, that's a funny one, isn't it? This is not the time to be a sort of harsh disciplinarian. You know, that is...
It's good, you know, at some point when all the players leave because you're not paying them,
yeah,
they're the players that are going to be playing for you, Ali.
Well, 1 or 2 players have left and have agreed to waive any conversation and everything, haven't they? Which has been a nice touch.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, there's a big thing on Five Live about it this week, a sort of discussion and debate, and it doesn't look great for them, unfortunately. But the good thing about a club of size of Rangers is they've got... They're always going to have interest because the difference between it's the same with Leeds when they had real trouble. There'll always be a group of people who's willing to get involved because they're a big club, and that's definitely true of Rangers. So fingers crossed they can pull out of it long term and sort it out.
I think it's different with something like Rangers and your club. It's just kind of like you just don't. You've been through the ringer so many times. Mm. It's kind of, why would you want to go and put more money into the coffers to just pay off more stinking debt? You know what
Portsmouth
I mean?
Portsmouth, as it is at the moment, isn't a viable business. Mm. It's not got enough. It's not got a big enough stadium. It hasn't lived within its means traditionally for a number of years now. And then this would be such a huge rescaling of ambitions, if at all they can get away with it, that it's going to be very, very unattractive to potential buyers. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is.
As a supporter, I would resent ploughing money into the club, buying shirts, going, you know, season ticket, getting your season ticket, and all your family involved. Because, you know, you might not have a club in 6 months. B, I'm just servicing debt that we shouldn't have.
Portsmouth have got to the stage where they're just looking for money to get them through to put off more debts.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's the equivalent of like some sort of, you know, borrowing Peter to pay for Paul all the time. The clubs the size of Rangers, and I used Leeds as an example earlier, are much bigger. You know, Leeds, it's easy to see the attraction with someone like Leeds. They're a one club in a big city. They've got a big stadium, they've got a great tradition, they've won things. All those things definitely work in their favour, and Rangers are exactly the same.
So
fingers crossed they can get it sorted.
I
think there is another club in Glasgow, I'm not entirely sure.
Of course there is,
they haven't given themselves the best of fighting a chances. According to Zico on the Ramble forum, there was a post
And that is Zico
today.
Zico.
Yeah, who knows? well, it isn't. He said that Rangers FC yesterday launched the Rangers Fans Fighting Fund, which was an appeal to donate money via PayPal in order to keep the club running till the end of the season. The fans were advised to donate to assembly at bluenose.co.uk. Blue Nose is a common name for Rangers fans. And this launch was attended by Ali McCoist and legendary captain Sandy Jardine and a host of fan representatives. And so on and so forth. There was a slight problem, though, as Zico says. They listed the wrong PayPal address. It didn't belong to Rangers Fans Fighting Fund, but in fact, a clown, the kind you get at kids' birthday parties, named Mr. Custard. So the correct address...
That's a lot of custard. He's going to be able to buy.
Should have been assembly at thebluenose.co.uk.
Oh, dear. Do we know how much money was donated?
I don't know, but Mr.
Hopefully,
Custard...
Hopefully it's enough that you can buy the club. Imagine if they had to sort of... They wore, like, clowny kits with massive boots and things like that. They all turned up in a little car and rolled out onto the pitch.
And every time a manager gets sacked, he gets a custard pie in the face.
Yeah. Mr. Custard.
Come out to... Quite appropriate at the moment, to be honest.
Mr. Custard. Acosta, wherever he is like a dog with two dicks at the moment. Yeah. He's just rolling around like in the cartoon DuckTales.
Yeah.
Lovely mention of DuckTales there. Also in the SPL, Motherwell beat Aberdeen 1-0. Stevie Hamill's beauty puts the Well on the same points as Rangers.
Yeah, there was a big derby in Edinburgh, wasn't there?
It was a big derby because the magnificent Gorgie boys beat the Hibs 2-0. That's 10 in a row, I think, on the Edinburgh scene. Yeah. So up they go. That'd into be... sixth position.
Yeah.
Top half. And it means something in Scotland. Now,
can I say title push? Amid all this chaos?
Don't be ridiculous. Okay. All right. There's always next year.
As Jim says, they're still going for last year's title.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now he's touting next year.
Do you know
which
what?
Is from the same run.
But if you total up their points from last year and this year, it might be enough for last year's title win. Now to La Liga, where Real Madrid have dropped points at home.
So could Hearts get in there?
They could. you know, it's not possible at the moment with UEFA, but if...
Hearts have had enough of a really unfair duopoly in the league, so they're going to get the spike. Right, fresh start.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, yeah, Real Madrid, they dropped points at home to Malaga, as we said earlier. They're a very nice gesture to Fabrice Mouamba and Eric Abidal, who's undergoing a liver transplant, with some t-shirts and stuff at the beginning of the match.
Can I just put this out there? I've said a long time ago now that Real Madrid will easily win the title, and I still think they will, but just to play devil's advocate slightly, it's now 8 points the gap.
Yes.
Classico Barcelona, is worth 4 points, isn't it?
Barcelona's still got to play them, yeah, and their head-to-head record, if they win at the new camp, which they probably will, will be better. So that's 4 points. You never know. You never know.
Madrid will drop enough points, still, even with 4 points.
It's still 5 points.
Before that draw, they won 11 in a row.
Did you see that free kick though? That was not getting stopped. Yeah, that was not getting stopped by anybody. He's top right, top left.
Cazorla is the best player in that league outside Real Madrid and Barcelona, without a shadow of a doubt.
Really?
He's absolute class. Mm-hmm. Absolute class.
Mourinho had some funny comments after the game. He said, "I won't criticise the referee, but he should have given us two enormous penalties." But it's all a part of La Liga though.
Are the goals bigger in these enormous penalties?
Well, no, then it got a bit more ridiculous. He said, "I always take into account that we can win, lose or draw. We always do our utmost to win, but we had to settle for a draw. That's La Liga." I think that's competitive sport, isn't it?
Is he explaining the game to a child?
Yeah. I won't criticise the referee, but he should have given us two penalties.
Enormous penalties.
I'm not going to have a go at you, but you're a massive prick. You have had a go at me, yeah?
Your disclaimer was false.
Yeah.
Sevilla were beaten by Barcelona 2-0. Xavi with a nice free kick.
It was, and also Messi's goal. I think he's losing his touch because it was very left footed, you know, the dummy and then the chip, both on your left foot.
Messi's goal was glorious.
Where was the right foot, Messi? Come on.
He never uses his right foot. He literally hasn't found the need for it yet.
If it comes up,
might as well now.
But doesn't he just turn up to the games? Somebody said he wasn't actually, well, for home games, he's never too sure who they're playing or something. He just turns up and does his stuff. I don't know whether that's true
or not. Be right.
But I'd like to think that he'll look at the table and go, "What, we're 8 points behind? Better start using the right then."
Yeah.
What, I can use my chest as well? I've never scored with that.
Levante beat Villarreal, injury time winner.
From
Xavi Torres. Brilliant free kick it was, although it was, I think it came off the post and then it was rebounded in. But they celebrated like it was 1999. But they've gone back into fourth level on points with Malaga. Tell you what, they're clinging on. It's incredible. We're nearly in April.
Yeah.
And they're still up there. God bless them. Into the Bundesliga we march.
I think Jim's looking forward to Levante knocking Arsenal at the preliminary Champions League qualifying round.
Cannot wait.
Dear. Let's go to the Bundesliga then, where Bayern Munich have scored a shedload of goals again. They beat Hertha at Berlin 6-0 in Berlin.
20 goals in 3 games.
They're in shit form at the moment. Absolutely shit form.
It's just unbelievable.
I didn't see the game. Did Gomez score again? Did he get another hat trick?
He didn't get a hat-trick, did he?
No, I'm not sure he scored, but they've gone 6-0, 7-1, 7-0, 2-0, I think, in the last four games. I know we've all sort of got a sort of round-table consensus here that we think Real Madrid will probably win the Champions League this season. But I tell you what, Bayern Munich, they'll have a say.
Well, do you remember they lost away to Basel, though, didn't they?
1-0. You
know, yeah, I mean...
Then they beat them 7.
Yeah, but I know, but they were at home, weren't they? And obviously, your away form is so crucial in the Champions League. Mm. So, you know, we shall see. That might be a bit of an Achilles heel for them.
Yeah, well, they're still in second, 5 points off Dortmund at the top.
Did you see Toni Kroos and Frank Ribery having paper, rock, scissors for the free kick?
Oh, yeah!
I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
Adore that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable stuff. Schalke are in fourth, hot on the heels of Mönchengladbach in third. Schalke beat Kaiserslautern 4-1 away. Everton fan Lewis Holtby got the scoring underway with a great strike.
And a great celebration as well. Corner flag guitar.
Yeah! Oh,
and then he pops it back in the ground. Respectful.
Yeah. Damn right.
Like it's back on its stand.
German efficiency at its best. Yeah. Yeah. A bit of metal, a bit of Rammstein. Mm. Then put it back in.
Probably tuned it up first.
Yeah, you did, yeah. Filled a form in.
34 goals this season or something. I think that's the record or something. The Schalke record.
Is that right?
Apparently. Mm. I think that's right. I may be wrong. So yeah. Huntelaar, not Hulk.
Questionable facts.
Yeah, that's Huntelaar. Yeah, Hulk.
Yeah, Huntelaar. Yeah, he scored. He got one in. Raul scored a peach as well. I was just thinking about Raul. Like, I thought to myself, oh yeah, just one or two sort of seasons at Schalke kind of maybe fade. He's done brilliantly.
Another arrow.
Yeah.
Smash.
He's scored his 400th goal recently, isn't he?
Yeah, such a good move for him, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And really, really good that he went to another country. You know, I love when players do that in their sort of
a totally different style of
older
play
days.
As well.
Yeah.
Well done to Raul.
Actually, Van Nistelrooy was sort of roundly applauded at
Real Madrid.
Madrid wasn't when he came off Malaga, which is nice to see as well.
Yeah, it is. Well, we mentioned Bayern Munich in the Champions League there. We have to say that Chelsea beating Napoli 4-1 to progress 5-4 in aggregate was a great turnaround. It really was.
Napoli looked exhausted by half-time.
I think they shit themselves a little bit as well, and they got tired towards the end, hugely. Yeah. There was only going to be one winner in extra time, wasn't there?
Their ambition seemed to wane as well. It was weird, yeah.
But full credit to Chelsea when they turned that around. Regardless of what you talk about their senior players sort of undermining managers, and we saw Terry giving instruction from the bench, which is quite sort of chilling it. The bottom line is they've
doesn't bode well for England.
Of things to come.
But judge them on the results. They've won the game. Yeah. You know, they did what they had to do. And you know, will Chelsea fans or Abramovich care if they win the Champions League this season? No,
I think they will care.
No, we won't care how it was done.
Oh, okay. If they get Avram Grant back, they'll have a great chance
him back
to
for the final.
Last
time Avram Grant was a manager, John Terry cried. So they're getting back.
Yeah. And Peter Kane,
then you can move on Terry. You won't mind as much.
Yeah. We started off praising Chelsea there, didn't we?
Yeah. If Chelsea win the Champions League.
We just can't do it.
If Chelsea win the Champions League, then they will play in the competition next season, regardless of whoever finishes fourth in the Premier League, Jim.
They're England's only remaining team in Europe.
Representative,
yeah. Well, they've got Benfica in the next round. You'd probably fancy them. Benfica are looking good, and they've obviously got a couple of decent results against Manchester United. Two draws, I think it was. But I still fancy Chelsea.
I think Chelsea will be the favourites that time, and they're in the semi. And once you're in the semi final, you've obviously got a decent chance.
The great thing for Chelsea, which is obviously worked against them, and we've said before, Vyas Boas might have been trying to move on too quickly, is they do have that absolute wealth of experience, especially in games like this. You know, and a away trip to Benfica is quite a kind of straightforward thing for a lot of those players. They've done that sort of thing so many times.
Elsewhere in the Champions League, Apoel Nicosia are against Real Madrid. I thought it was a bit of a shame, actually, because they will get done over. But then, you know, it's great for Nicosia to have Real Madrid turn up. I have to say, I have to mention this, that when Real Madrid beat CSKA Moscow 4-1 at home, 5-2 on aggregate, of course, you know, I mean, they look great. Wonderful form.
They're the biggest team in the world.
Yep.
Yeah, they've got a lot of history themselves.
That's right.
Won it more than anyone's ever won it.
Jeff Shreves was over there. Sky Sports Jeff Shreves. He's over there. He's interviewing Xabi Alonso after the game.
Was he working? He was actually working.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, okay, yeah. One of the best midfielders playing for one of the best teams in the world, right? He's just come off the pitch having beaten CSKA Moscow comfortably 4-1. A routine win in the last 16 of the Champions League. Yeah. And he says, Xabi, the story of the night is Chelsea. What did you think of their turnaround?
I don't know, I was playing.
Yeah. I had something on, Jeff, you massive bell piece.
Were you at the game, Jeff? Because I've just been playing.
Can we have every year we have a Shreve Tuesday where we all just all day we just abuse Jeff Shreve for being an absolute toilet face?
That's every Tuesday, isn't it?
It should be every Tuesday.
It's like you don't just tell your girlfriend you love her on Valentine's Day. You tell her every day thing. Tell Shreve every day you hate him.
Yeah, because every day it's true.
Yeah, I hate you double that I hate you yesterday, and I hate you half as much. So I'm going to hate you tomorrow. Yeah. What an idiot.
That's what Alonso would have been thinking. Yeah. God, I thought we were rid of you. Yeah. You're half the reason I moved out here. Yeah. You're inane probing after games.
Jeff Shreves, you can tell Jeff Shreves goes back to his sort of mates back in the pub and tells about how much he's really good mates with Alonso.
Yeah.
Oh, we go way back, don't worry.
Me and Jabs.
Yeah, me and Xabi, yeah.
But Alonso didn't even play for Chelsea. Yeah. It's not like it was Liverpool. Oh, your old club's done well.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
I can't imagine like his manager from the touchline's going, Chelsea have clawed back. Yeah. Like, but he wouldn't know. He wouldn't know. What has happened, Jeff? Fill us in, you twat.
He's the smuggest prick on television.
Yeah, he is.
Keys and Graham.
I mean, what was he expecting Alonso to say? What did Alonso say?
Alonso just sort of said, well, that's the great... I think he said something like, that's the great thing about the Champions League. You can throw up these results. I mean, what else did...
I don't understand
what... what's the point of Shreve's asking...
What's the point
question?
Of Shreve's?
Yeah,
what you'd have been perhaps more accurate with. But you could imagine him, though, being all smug in the stadium, like when Real Madrid get the third and the fourth and they're knocking it around and going, well, this is all very well, but do you know what's happening at Stamford Bridge, guys?
So in England.
This is all invalid.
I could imagine really moaning about having to go to Madrid as well. Yeah. Oh, I wanted the Chelsea game.
Oh, dear. Yeah, so we needed to say that. And then the other two remaining fixtures in the Champions League left, Marseille versus Bayern Munich. You'd probably fancy Bayern for that, I imagine. And Milan versus Barcelona. Ooh. Ladies and gentlemen, hello. Zlatan will go back to the Camp Nou. And for everybody who tweeted me, he will play in this one.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that. Unless he's actually injured, of course.
Yeah.
Which he won't be.
Yeah.
Because he is
he'll be up for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you reckon, can he do it, Jim?
I think Barca will go through. Although, you know, I've seen firsthand, I'm still having nightmares about it, how good Milan are.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's going to be a Barca-Madrid final, guys.
That'd be great.
Imagine it.
It's about time. We've been promised that a few seasons ago.
Yeah. It definitely can be a Barca-Madrid final, right? Because they drew the semis as well, and I forget what the draw was.
It could be.
Yeah. Okay, right.
Yeah. Right then. Luke, off you go to Diego Corner. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Right, what's happening over there?
Hello, everyone. It's normal stuff, really. But I mean, as these things work, as sure as night follows day, Pele says something, so El Diego has to respond. Pele recently said,
"It's true."
Which I mean, if you take this sort of quote,
because Diego's not mentioned at all, is he? In what Pele says here,
but I just want to touch on the fact that if you take this Pele sort of quote out in isolation, it is still the most outrageously arrogant quote, admittedly, from probably the best footballer of all time. Fair enough, but with great power comes great responsibility. You know, it'd be nice to see a bit of sort of modesty and that sort of stuff. He says, "I was born to play football just like Beethoven was born to write music." I mean, come on. I don't blame Diego for this. I don't blame
Diego.
Do you think
Diego, though, he types in Pele into a search engine and just clicks refresh?
He gets, a Google,
there's one.
He gets a Google.
It's all the things like Pele prick.
Yeah.
Pele dickhead.
Yeah.
Like just stuff like that. Just to sort of satisfy his own belief in.
He's got a Googler there for Pele quote.
Yeah.
So he just gets an email through.
Definitely.
Yeah. And El Diego says, "If Pele thinks he's the Beethoven of football, then I'm Ronnie Wood, Keith Richards and Bono of football because I have so much passion."
Bono?
He's brought the average down there, isn't he?
And my tax-paying record is awful.
I'm thinking, how did Ronnie Wood make that little list, though?
He's a Rolling Stone. not the main one.
I've never heard any Beethoven music in a match, so as I've told you before, any time he takes the wrong pill, he comes up with a crazy statement.
He loves the pill gags, doesn't he?
Pele may have taken the morning pills at night time, so he should make sure he takes the right pills. All right, Charlie Nicholas, just going on a bit. In fact, it would be better if he changed his doctor.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would. The pill administer.
Meanwhile, well, El Diego was massively taking his eye off the ball. The goalkeeper for Al Wasl has been given a 17-match ban.
Oh, I saw this.
Yeah, for slapping an opposition coach around the head.
It's Kiki Sanchez Flores.
Oh, well, it was, wasn't it? Yeah,
don't
it was.
Slap that handsome hair.
No, very handsome man, yeah. But the goalkeeper, Majed Nasir, he's a UAE national team goalkeeper as well.
Do you know what? I think he's got... Well, according to obvious places to look on the internet for people, far more international caps than he's got, like club caps.
Oh, I see. Okay, right.
Something like that.
But is it gloves on or gloves off? That's what I don't know.
I believe it was gloves on.
It was. I think it was in the context of a game.
But he should have slapped him with holding the glove, like it was a dueling glove.
Yeah.
It's the honourable thing to do.
He took it badly, though, and he said, "I'm not serving the ban. I'm just going to retire." Well, hang on a minute. You're only 27. He's 27.
I thought when I saw that, I thought he must be like 36, 37. Yeah. Oh, bollocks. I'm going to miss the rest of the
season. I've got an oil well in the backyard.
But this is the kind of mentality Diego's installed, isn't it? He probably wouldn't have done that if he wasn't around.
No,
just react and then just be too proud to sort of admit you did something stupid.
And it'll let him off as long as he sort of... as a go at Pele as well.
Yeah.
Diego was unavailable to comment on this matter of his own goalkeeper.
Too busy mouthing up. Too busy mouthing off about Pele.
Other stuff on. Steve is listening to Bono.
Just
before we started recording this show, I noticed that Chris Samba has had a banana thrown at him by a Locomotive Moscow fan. But it's okay because
it's not racist.
It's not racist, is it? It's fine. It's failing a test.
Yeah, exactly.
For the test on playing for Blackburn in the Premier League.
Nothing racist, mate.
And if it is racist, how come it isn't?
Yeah, exactly.
Could have been hungry.
Dear, oh dear. Right, well, you ponder that, people. It's time for Going for Gold.
Going for Gold. Gold.
It is time for Going for Gold. And, oh, it looks like I've deleted a couple of the clues. Okay. Well, this is going to be a short one then, isn't it?
I got asked on Twitter to say, stop, is it Chris Bart Williams?
Oh, no, it isn't, but I like it when people do that. Yeah. It reminds me of Chris Bart Williams, really. my debut for Middlesbrough lasted 4 minutes.
Ooh. Stop. Lee Catamol.
No.
Good guess, though.
Stop. Jonathan Woodgate.
No. I wasn't seen again for 4 months.
Stop. Paul Merson.
No.
Stop. Paul Gascoigne.
No. I was 6'3½". Probably still am.
Stop. It's not Branco, is it?
No.
He wasn't that tall, I think. Stop. Robert Huth.
No. I went to Middlesbrough for £8 million.
Stop.
Stop.
Mark Viduka.
No.
Oh. Stop. Janino.
No.
6'3".
Oh, yeah.
Stop. Alfonso Alves.
No.
Oh. Like, he was like 14 when he was a lot of money.
I replaced Sean Teal as Paul McGrath's defensive partner.
Stop.
Yep.
Hugo Ehiog.
Hugo Ehiog.
Yes.
I
get
would
in
like,
there.
Yeah.
Doesn't he manage a band now?
I think he's got a vested interest in that in a record label or management company or something. He's well involved with that band Little Comets, who are actually quite good. Northeastern sort of angular sort of pop band.
I'd like to thank Chris Milliken on Twitter for suggesting that particular man.
Any relation to Sarah Milliken?
No.
Unlikely.
I haven't got one in ages.
I'm doing an Arsenal. I'm on a really good run and I've just dropped off completely.
Yeah. But you're doing well in the opening question, so you can't have it both ways.
That's right.
It's a game of two halves.
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
And now it's time for an email.
Yes, it is. Ramblers.
Yes.
I got caught out the other day. A friend of mine invited me round to watch the original Alien film, which he claimed accurately was from 1979. My response, rather than being impressed with the cinematic masterpiece, was 12 years after the Summer of Love.
Oh, yeah, he's right.
Later, my girlfriend asked what I was on about. I ended up sheepishly explaining to her the concept of the profile, Summer of Love, and eventually the sperm race. Tilting her head, she looked at me and asked in all seriousness, so if there were twins, does that mean the sperm race was a draw? I had to agree. It's from Tom Barrett.
Yeah,
oh,
Tom.
What do we think?
It's an excellent question.
I think it probably is.
Yeah, it has to be, yeah.
Now, we haven't had the sperm race out for a while, though.
No, we haven't, but, you know, it's an integral part of the history of the show.
Yeah. It's a draw. Let's have a replay.
Yeah, that's it.
If a girl asked me if, like, when the Summer of Love was, it's tonight, baby, and then we'd get down to it, and then we'd have sex, and then we'd make a baby. So, thank you. Goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah. Pete is actually Sean now, Paul.
Now, it was summer, but it appears to be raining in your heart.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time. We made it.
Yeah.
The finishing line is in sight.
We've rambled through.
This time round, we have got a Hungarian footballing legend. It's Sándor Kocsis.
Oh, lovely.
Lovely stuff.
And they've had a few.
They've had a few. In his era, very much. Yeah. It was the
almost
main
exclusively in his era. it's a black and white profile, isn't it?
I like
the black and white one.
It is a black and white profile. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. One of those comparatively unknown greats from the game and arguably one of the best forwards Europe produced from yesteryear. Really is different class, this guy. He was. He was, of course, born in Budapest in Hungary. He was born on the 21st of September 1929.
38 years before them Summer of Loves.
Ooh, yeah.
Ages before.
Yeah.
38?
Yeah.
Like a whole middle-aged person before.
Yeah.
Good.
One of those comparatively unknown greats from the game of football, and arguably one of the best forwards Europe produced from yesteryear.
One of the best forwards ever, surely.
Do you think?
Yeah, well, you've got to put it up there. I mean, if the Mighty Maggies were one of the best teams ever,
yeah.
he was the
focal point.
Well, one of them, yeah.
One of them, yeah.
Goal point.
Yeah, good.
Born in Budapest in Hungary, Kocsis started his footballing career at the age of 17 in 1946, playing for Kobanyai. He only played a few games for them before being snapped up by Ferencváros, one of Hungary's big boys, of course. And he was there for a few years and scored a lot of goals.
He was like a forward, sort of right side forward, wasn't he?
Mm.
Back in the day when they used to play 74-4.
That's right. Yeah. early on in his career, he had a healthy scoring rivalry between himself and one of the all-time greats of the game, Ferenc Puskás.
Never heard of him.
Is that right? Puskás, of course, Real Madrid legend, and amongst other things, you must have heard of Ferenc Puskás. And if you haven't, then check him out. He was playing for Honved at the time, Puskás, and Kocsis was playing for Ferencváros. In 1949, Kocsis scored 33 goals that season, but Puskás beat him to the goal scoring, the top of the goal scoring charts. The following season, he got 30, one off Puskás again. So it was very, very close in them early days, and that would continue. Now, Kocsis scored 70 league goals in 89 matches for Ferencváros, but he was just getting warmed up, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you. Now, you think that's good? You just stick around for a moment. Now, while this was going on between these two great forwards and other brilliant players in Hungary, at the time, Gustav Seves, the manager, one of the most important managers in the game's evolution, he was watching on. And he took over the Hungarian national side in 1949. And he saw how Austria's Wunder team of the 30s and Italy's World Cup winning sides had teams largely made up of players who played week in, week out with each other. And it was very important to the national game. Now, in 1949, Hungary became a communist state, and Seves persuaded the country's Minister of Defence, who had taken control of that great Honved side, because they were also an army team.
Yeah, they became the army team, didn't they?
They did, yeah. And he persuaded them to sign some of these players, like Kocsis, and to kind of build a team there that would be played at national team level as well, which would give them a great chance of doing brilliantly in international football, which of course they did.
Go out, win some battles as well. with their football. It was so good, they beat actual armies.
Yeah,
at war.
With footballs, just with footballs.
I mean, you don't really need to, you know, really go on at length with who's a man who's effectively a general about, you know, bringing the country together and making it stronger. It's a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
that's right. So a lot of that Honved team would make up the great Mighty Maggie's team. Now, we have profiled them, and I urge you to go and listen to that profile if you haven't, on the website.
Because we are brilliant.
They are brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
And we just talk about them.
Puskás is already in there, though, isn't he?
No, on his own.
Only as part of the Mighty Maggies.
Because Nando Hidiguti is another great player.
Yeah.
So, seriously, check out the Maggies, because it will fill in some of the blanks of this one. So obviously, Puskás and Kocsis formed a formidable strike partnership for Honved. Imagine those two playing up front.
And he was such a graceful player, Kocsis, as well.
Have you seen
footage of him? He runs this almost elegant, laid-back, sort of languid running style. I'll tell you what it's reminiscent of. Big Michael Johnson, the sprinter.
Right, okay.
The guy who runs a bit like a duck, you know, that sort of style. Very graceful to look at. You know, it's good to watch.
Well groomed.
For one very, very weird moment, I thought you meant Man City's Michael Johnson.
No, unequivocally not like him.
Now, while they were playing together, Kocsis outdid Puskás finally in the scoring charts three times in 6 years when they both played together at the club. And I think maybe all but one, the year that Kocsis didn't win it, Puskás filled in. So they were in the top two scorers in the country, and they were both playing for the same team, so you can imagine they won a lot. And they did, they won five league titles in between 49 and 55, which is when they both played together at the club. And we have to say, Kocsis' scoring record for Honved reads: in the league, played 145, scored 153.
There you go. You start a game a goal ahead.
Yes. Goal and a bit ahead.
Yeah.
He's a dirty boy.
What a pervert.
Goal pervert.
Absolute fiend.
Yeah.
Freak.
Yeah.
Goal freak.
An avid collector.
Probably
went to goal conventions.
Yeah. He spoke at them.
Dressed in his football kit.
They just happened around him, from the sound of it.
That's very
He's doing the keynote, mate.
Yeah. That wasn't a hat trick, that was a convention of goals.
A trilogy of goals.
Now, can I see your pass?
Yeah. Now, he was a huge part of the Mighty Baggers going to Wembley and ending England's unbeaten run against foreign sides at home, winning 6-3. Again, more of that in the Mighty Baggers profile itself on the website.
The preposterous arrogance of England in their mistrust of Johnny Foreigner.
That's right.
Comes home to roost in remarkable fashion. I'd sum that up.
They also beat us 7-1, didn't they?
They did. And Kocsis scored a brace in that game. But it was
that the one where Robson went, oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
We really underestimated them.
Seb has actually dropped Kocsis originally from the game, the 6-3 game, after the striker went out on an all-night drinking bender. However, Seb has changed his mind, stating, "I was furious and intended to keep him out of the team against England to teach him a lesson, but it was Kocsis and we were playing at Wembley."
Yeah, come on. Yeah. You know, I'll treat you all the same. Yeah. I better think about it.
Yeah, and it's best for us all that I don't do that. Yeah. Mm.
Oh, the fullback who's been out with him. Am I still? No, you're definitely still banned.
Yeah. In fact, you're the bench for this game. Yeah. You dog.
You persuaded him to go out with you. And it was incredible. I mean, Kocsis, he was a type of forward that the British had never seen before. The movement off the ball, the technique, it was just absolutely glorious. As a lot of those players in that team were.
Scored every type of goal as well. From what I've seen, he could score goals one-on-one where he'd send the keeper down early. He could score good, big, towering headers as well.
He had a lethal left foot drive on him.
Yeah, but wonderful haircut. Fine figure of a man.
Yeah, everything. So the Mighty Maggies went on to win the Olympic gold in 1952, Kocsis scoring in every round apart from the final, 6 goals in 5 games. There's quite a funny story. One of the wingers, I think it was, he came at half time in one of the matches. They were 3-0 up and I think he'd got 3 assists or something like that. And Kocsis came over to him and said, "Oi, stop drilling the balls low for the crosses. Get the ball in the air," because he much preferred the header, whereas Puskás preferred the ball on the deck. Yeah. And so he switched it up and knocked the ball high in the air, and I think they won 6-0 and Kocsis scored 2 goals, you know. Yeah. But it was such a...
You have to vary them.
Well,
that would confuse Stuart Downing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. That's pretty much what they did. They had to vary them but as they said, you know, if you got it right 9 times out of 10, we'd score.
It's got the Steve McQueen, Paul Newman style sort of rivalry between them.
Absolutely incredible. This is quite a funny one. In 1952, Kocsis was offered a brand new car by a big, rich Honved fan. But he was a very modest guy, so he politely declined. And one of his teammates described, he couldn't believe it, because he described his car as an absolute banger. Yeah, good stuff there. 1954 World Cup finals, he scored an absolute hatful.
Yeah.
Top scorer with 11 goals.
This is when they beat West Germany in the group stages.
Well, their first game in the World Cup finals... Kocsis, the first one certainly, was a 9-0 win against South Korea. He got 3. Second match, 8-3 against Germany, where he got 4.
They beat them 8-3 in the group and then lost to them in the final. Mm.
They did. Well, again, I stress, listen to the Mighty Maggies profile. Yeah. But we never talked about Kocsis, his scoring in this tournament. So he scores 3 on his World Cup debut, then 4. And then he gets a couple against Brazil in the quarters, a couple against Uruguay in the semis. Failed to score again in the final again. Well, they were sensationally beaten 3-2 by the West Germans, but won the Golden Boot with 11 goals in that tournament, which is incredible. I mean, his international scoring record is 68 caps, 75 goals. It's obscene.
He's one of the biggest. He's one of the most prolific international goal scorers of all time.
He is.
I think he's only just behind Ali Daei and one or two others, I think.
Yeah, well, his 11 goals in 5 World Cup matches gives him the best goals per games ratio in the competition's history. And only Kocsis and 3 other men have scored more than 1 hat-trick in World Cup finals, the others being...
Oh, Ronaldo?
No.
Gerd Müller. Yeah.
Just Fontaine.
Yeah, he got 13 in one tournament, didn't he? Yeah.
And Gabriel Batistuta.
Mm. Batagol.
Mm, you see.
Can you imagine how much of a legend the international players that came after that man? You know, it's no wonder they're nowhere.
No, and now, yeah.
He scored 7 hat-tricks for Hungary.
Yeah.
For Uruguay.
Certainly not. That was in the...
The goals were just spilling out all over the place.
7 hat-tricks for Hungary. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And yet believable.
Yeah. He wasn't hungry for goals.
Yeah. I think... that'll do, won't it?
No. You said yes, but, you know.
And then in 1956, of course, the Hungarian Revolution happened. The team was dissolved. And Puskás and Kocsis left, or one could say maybe even fled the country abroad to play. Kocsis went to Switzerland originally to play for Young Fellows in Zurich, one of the best names of a football team, I think, in the history of the game.
Did he not go to Barcelona?
After Young Fellows.
Oh, sorry, OK. I thought he went to Barcelona from Honved.
Yeah, no.
Because Puskás obviously went to Madrid, didn't he?
Yeah. So he wasn't there long, as you say. He joined his countrymen in Spain. and played for Barca, whereas Puskás was at Real Madrid playing with Raymond Kopa.
Yes, from last week, yeah.
From last week. According to Barcelona, or their website, he was known as Golden Head due to his superb heading ability, which is delightful. He won a number of trophies at Barcelona, including back-to-back La Liga titles during his 7 seasons there. But due to that incredible team at Madrid, they were often trumped, especially in Europe. Well, they came very close to winning the European Cup in 1961. They'd beaten Real Madrid in the first round, becoming the first ever side to beat Madrid in that competition. They reached the final against Benfica, who were managed by the enigmatic Bela Gutman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He did score
until half time.
Yeah. He left.
He did score in the final, did Kocsis, but they lost 3-2. Incidentally, the match was played at the same ground Hungary had lost to West Germany 3-2 in the 1954 World Cup final, appropriately named the Wankdorf Stadium in Bern.
Not a very happy hunting ground.
Not a happy hunting ground. He retired in 1966, went on to do a bit of coaching with Barcelona and Hercules. And then sadly, in 1979, he fell to his death on the fourth floor of a hospital in Barcelona after he was in there for a treatment for...
It's leukemia, I think.
Yeah,
it was. Stomach cancer, I think. Yeah.
People suggested it was suicide, maybe an accident, but a very sad ending to the man's life. But an incredible player, absolutely incredible player. And according to FIFA, an international strike rate of 1.1 goals per game. They also say apparently over 400 headed goals. That's according to FIFA. You know, who am I to question them? Well, certainly parts of them, but not that. But one of the finest forwards ever.
Yeah, one of the most complete forward players.
A ridiculously good scoring record, and he's coming into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
He's welcome. Very welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of Ramble for this week. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com, and the website is thefootballramble.com. Jim?
Yes, it is. If you go over to the website this week, there's blogs, there's the Hall of Fame, there's the shop, there's the forums, all kinds of different things.
What's your favourite part, Jim?
My favourite part is probably in the About section. Yeah, the picture of me.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's probably
so check that out
bit.
As well.
Yeah, so have a look. It's probably not even the best picture of me. In fact, it certainly isn't.
You finished?
Yeah.
Right then. Right, well, say goodbye, Jim.
Bye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
See you later.
And it's goodbye from me. See you later, Bon Tuplers. Gentlemen, it's profile time. Oh, yeah.
Not an email.
No emails today.
Nah. No way he beat the crossbar. No way.